picture this. You are you're standing at an absolute crossroads in your life.
Right. We've all been there.
Exactly. And in one direction, there is the safe choice. You know the one. It's a stable job, a totally predictable daily routine, a guaranteed paycheck, basically total security.
Yeah, the comfortable path.
Right. But then in the other direction, there is the wild card, like quitting that job, moving across the country, maybe starting that business you've always talked
A
about,
huge risk.
a total risk, but with the promise of, complete freedom. And you are standing right in the middle of those two futures, feeling that agonizing, just paralyzing tension of being utterly, hopelessly stuck.
It's an awful
It
feeling.
really is. You know that feeling. We all do.
Yeah.
And usually when we feel that way, we assume there is something fundamentally broken in our decision making, right? Like we think we're just being weak or indecisive or that it's some sort of psychological flaw we need to go to therapy to fix.
We absolutely do. We carry this tremendous guilt about indecision. I mean, society frames it as a failure of our mental machinery, you
Yeah.
know?
The assumption is that a properly functioning adult should be able to just look at the board, calculate the pros and cons, compute the optimal answer, and just move forward.
Right, like a math equation.
Yeah. And when we can't do that, we feel like a computer freezing up, just a total system crash.
Okay, let's unpack this, because what if I told you that that exact feeling of being stuck, that terrifying paralysis at the crossroads, isn't a psychological flaw at all?
Which is a wild thought.
It is. What if instead it is a mathematically necessary phenomenon? So today our deep dive is taking us into a truly mind-bending theoretical text. It's a document titled odecomplex.txt, and it outlines a radical new framework called Ode Complex and something known as free will mathematics, or FWM.
It's fascinating stuff.
It really is. We are going to change how you look at the choices you make today. That is the mission.
And the premise of this source material is just incredibly ambitious. It takes unsolvable mathematical equations.
The kind that usually break the system. Exactly, the kind that normally causes a system to crash, and it transforms them into literal dimensions of impossibility. Then it uses those mechanics, specifically differential equations, to mathematically define human free will.
Wow.
Yeah, it builds a rigorous bridge between abstract calculus and the deeply human, sweaty-palmed experience of trying to make a major life choice.
Right. But to get to that sweaty palm human psychology, we actually have to start with the math.
We do. We have to lay the foundation.
So we're going back to high school algebra, specifically the classic unsolvable equation, which is x squared plus 1 equals 0.
Right. So if you do the basic algebra there and move the one to the other side,
Just subtract it over.
right, you get x squared equals negative 1. And standard mathematics tells us this is a complete dead end.
Because you can't square something and get a negative.
Exactly. No real number, when multiplied by itself, can equal a negative number. A positive times a positive is positive. And a negative times a negative is also positive. So there is simply no room on the standard number line for an answer to this.
And historically, because the math seemingly broke right there, mathematicians just, well, they invented a workaround, right?
They did. They created the imaginary number I.
Yeah, and even when I was learning it, it felt almost like a hack. Like the teacher was basically saying, look, we can't actually solve this in reality, so let's just pretend there's a magical ghost number that does.
A ghost number, yeah, that's a good way to put how it feels. But the source material fundamentally reframes that historical assumption.
Okay.
It proposes that x squared equals negative 1 is not an unsolvable puzzle, and I is not a hack at all. Instead, it classifies this equation as a structural impossibility constraint.
Structural impossibility constraint.
Yes, and to understand this, we have to look at ordinary differential equations, or ODEs. Think of an ODE as simply a rule book that dictates how a system changes over time.
Okay, a rule book.
Right. So when an ODE encounters a state, it cannot process like trying to find a real number that squares to a negative. It's hitting an impossibility constraint.
So the rule book is basically demanding something that the physical reality of the system just cannot allow.
Exactly. Imagine tracing the trajectory of the math. You are moving from x to x squared. that trajectory simply cannot reach negative one using only real operations.
Because it's trapped on that flat line.
Right. It's impossible within that single flat dimension. So standard math says the system fails, the equation is totally broken. But the OD complex framework argues that the system doesn't fail. It actually requires a phase rotation.
A phase rotation.
Yeah. Instead of just moving forward or backward, which is just magnitude scaling, the system literally has to rotate into an entirely new orthogonal dimension to satisfy the constraint.
Let me try to picture this with an analogy based on the text. Imagine a train moving along a strictly one-dimensional track of real numbers.
Okay, a train on a straight track.
Right. It's chugging on the flat ground, and suddenly it hits a massive, totally impenetrable brick wall where the tracks just end.
And that wall is the impossibility constraint.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Standard mathematics says the train crashes, it explodes, and the journey is permanently over. But in this OD complex framework, the universe refuses to let the train crash.
It finds a way around.
It finds a way up. Instead, the tracks physically curve upward. The train builds a loop-de-loop, rotating up into the sky to keep moving smoothly over the barrier. And that sky, that new direction, is the complex plane.
I love that analogy. And what's fascinating here is how this proves that complex numbers aren't just abstract, imaginary inventions cooked up by frustrated mathematicians.
Right. They aren't ghost numbers.
Exactly. They are, as the text calls them, natural trajectory extensions. The underlying math actively forces that new dimension to exist, so the trajectory can continue smoothly via what they call a phase rotation operator.
Wow.
Yeah, the impossibility doesn't break the world. It forces the world to expand to accommodate the contradiction.
So the train has to go up because it physically cannot go forward.
Right.
Okay, so if the universe bends a straight line to keep a mathematical train moving when it hits a single wall, what does it do when two trains are colliding? Like, what happens when you are trapped between two different rules that are actively fighting each other in the exact same space?
Now we're getting to the really good stuff. This is where the framework graduates from 1D to 2D, introducing OD complex squared.
Okay, 2D.
Imagine a system governed by two coupled equations, where law X and law Y demand entirely incompatible trajectories simultaneously.
At the exact same time.
Right. The framework defines this intense disagreement using a conflict tensor.
A conflict tensor. I mean, that sounds like a piece of technology from a starship, but if I'm understanding the text, it's really just a mathematical way of measuring absolute unresolvable disagreement.
That's a perfect way to summarize it. Let's look at a physics example from the text to ground this. The electromagnetic paradox.
Okay, lay it on me.
Imagine a single subatomic particle. An electric field is interacting with it, and law X dictates that this particle must move directly toward the central axis.
So it's being pulled in?
Yes. Yeah. But at the exact same moment, a magnetic field is interacting with it, and law Y dictates that the particle must move directly away from the axis.
Okay, so it's being pushed out.
Exactly. These are mutually exclusive commands. Standard differential equations would say the system crashes because there is no single path that satisfies both laws.
But just like our train didn't crash into the wall, this particle doesn't just, you know, shatter into pieces.
It doesn't. The contradiction itself becomes a structural feature. The system resolves the conflict tensor by entering a 2D phase manifold.
A manifold?
Yeah, you can think of a manifold as a geometric surface, like a sheet of fabric.
Yeah.
Rather than following a single straight line, the particle survives by evolving on this surface of possibilities. Because it's being pulled in and pushed out at the same time, the contradiction forces it into a helical, spiraling trajectory.
Oh, wow. Sort of like water draining in a sink.
How so?
Well, gravity is pulling the water straight down. Right. But the physical ceramic of the sink is pushing it outward.
Oh, I see where you're going.
Yeah, so instead of breaking the water, those conflicting forces create a whirlpool. The water spirals. It finds a new shape to exist inside the conflict.
That captures the mechanics perfectly. And this extends far beyond just particle physics. The text applies this to human systems too, like economics. Specifically, the supply-demand paradox.
Oh, right, the classic economy problem.
Exactly. Supply inherently wants to push the price of a good up to maximize profit, but demand inherently wants to push the price down to maximize savings.
They are actively fighting.
They are. But when supply cost doesn't equal demand value, the economy doesn't just instantly collapse into a black hole.
The economy finds a whirlpool.
Exactly. The resolution, according to the OD complex framework, is that the price oscillates. It creates a limit cycle around an equilibrium point. The intense contradiction creates cyclical volatility prices going up and down over time rather than a system crash.
Here's where it gets really interesting, I think. This completely rewrites how we, as listeners, should view paradoxes.
Absolutely.
Usually we think of a paradox as an error message. Like, think of the famous liar paradox. This statement is false.
Right. If it's true, it's false. And if it's false, it's true.
Yeah. We think of it as a broken sentence, like a computer blue screening.
Mm-hmm.
But under this framework, it's not a broken sentence at all. It's a blinker. It's an oscillation flipping rapidly between true and false. The system survives by literally living on the surface of the contradiction.
Contradictions are not dead ends. That's the key takeaway. They are the birthplaces of complex structures. The system lives inside the geometry of the paradox.
Okay, we've laid out some pretty heavy mathematical foundation here. Physical forces, like supply and demand or electric and magnetic fields, can completely contradict each other. And instead of destroying the system, they create a stable, complex surface, a manifold for the system to live on. But let's bring this back to the person listening right now. What happens when those contradictory forces aren't out there in the economy or in a magnetic field? What happens when they are inside human psychology?
And this brings us to the core of the text, free will mathematics, or FWM.
This is the really mind-bending part.
It is. This is the document's most profound synthesis. It argues that free will is not simply the absence of determinism. It is not just a blank slate. Free will is, mathematically, the invariant manifold formed by two contradictory will functions.
Will functions, meaning the literal desires we feel in our brains.
Exactly.
And the text leans heavily on this specific Swedish concept, right? Gorisär.
Yes, gorisär is a vital term here. It roughly translates to diverges, separates, or pulls apart. It describes a state of active, growing tension.
It's that agonizing feeling of being pulled in two directions that we talked about at the very beginning.
Exactly that feeling.
So let's return to our listeners standing at the crossroads. Will A is the desire to choose safety, keep the stable job. Mathematically, the text describes this as a vector moving toward the origin, staying grounded and secure.
Right.
And then will B is the desire to take risks, quit the job, move away. This is a vector rotating outward, expanding into the unknown. They're pointing in entirely different directions. They go, sir.
And this requires a radical redefinition of the self. In this framework, the self is not a single point on a map moving along a designated line. The self is the dynamical system that lives on this contradiction manifold. You are the surface of the paradox.
Wait, hold on. I have to push back on this a little because I'm trying to map this to the vectors I learned in high school physics.
Sure, go ahead.
If two vectors, two opposing forces, are pulling at me from different directions, doesn't the math usually just average them out?
How do you mean?
Like, if I'm pulled north and I'm pulled east at the same time, physics says my body just moves northeast. Why wouldn't my brain just do that? Why don't the two wills just sum together into a compromised direction?
Because human desires are not merely spatial directions, and the text specifically addresses why compromise is mathematically impossible here.
Okay, why?
In FWM, if you simply sum the vectors of keep my safe job and burn my life down and move to a deserted island, what is the northeast of that?
Working part-time from a slightly less deserted island.
Right, but there really isn't one. They are mutually exclusive states. If you sum them, that would mean an immediate deterministic collapse into a single forced direction. There would be no tension, no choice, just a calculated average.
So because there is no middle ground, the math breaks again.
Exactly. Because these wills, gaudisser, because their divergence creates an actual contradiction, they carve out a null space.
A null space.
Yeah. Because the options are fundamentally incompatible, no single direction can dominate. The distance between the pole directions actively grows, creating a gap of possibility. The system, the self, doesn't average out. It hovers in the tension between them.
Wow. So for the listener sitting in their car, you know, walking the dog right now, feeling that tension, how do we actually measure this freedom? This raises an important question, because if free will is a geometric mathematical space, a null space, we should be able to quantify it, right?
We absolutely can. And the formal definition from the source is striking. Free will denoted mathematically as FW is literally defined as the area of the contradiction manifold.
The actual calculable area.
Yes. If the area of FW is zero, there is no free will. The system is entirely deterministic. It has collapsed to a single point. But if FW is greater than zero, free will exists.
And the text explains that the size of that area, the literal square footage of your free will, changes depending on your stage of life.
It does. It talks about an expanding contradiction.
Which is associated with youth, right? With creativity, and yes, with the immense anxiety of choice.
Exactly. When you're 25, the wills are pulling apart faster than they can be resolved, so the area of your free will gets massive. It's overwhelming because the manifold is huge.
It's like having too many open tabs in your brain.
Precisely. Conversely, a shrinking contradiction is associated with aging, routine, and commitment. As we make choices and settle into a life path, the options converge. The manifold shrinks, the area decreases, and life becomes more deterministic. The math perfectly models the psychological reality of getting older.
But eventually, whether we are young or old, we have to make a choice. Like, we can't live hovering in the null space of a paradox forever.
No, we can't.
So how do we escape? How does the math explain the actual physical act of deciding?
The framework introduces the concept of the conditional collapse. Remember, the self is living on this manifold of possibilities. To escape the paradox, the self begins asking questions. It probes the geometric surface of the manifold.
Questions like, is this risk reversible? Or can I afford to lose my health insurance if I quit?
Exactly, those kinds of practical grounding questions.
But why does asking a question get us closer to a decision? Hmm. What is the actual mechanism happening to the math there?
Because every time you ask one of those questions, your answer mathematically deletes possibilities. You are pruning the surface of the manifold.
Pruning it?
Yeah. If you ask, can I afford to go without a paycheck for 6 months? And the honest answer is no, then a massive section of that geometric space simply ceases to exist. It becomes mathematically impossible. The possibilities narrow. The area shrinks.
And the text notes that this probing process is governed by what it calls the self-reflection parameter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Represented by the Greek letter alpha.
Yes, alpha. Our personal agency is literally defined by this alpha parameter. It measures our ability to push against the flow of time, to explore the manifold, and to ask these difficult questions before we are forced into a blind decision.
So the higher your alpha,
the more you investigate the null space before it collapses.
Okay, so going back to our listener at the crossroads, you are staring at your laptop, agonizing over whether to send an email, quitting your safe job to chase the wild adventure.
Right.
The longer you sit there, hands hovering over the keyboard, feeling the tension, letting the wills pull you back and forth, your free will area is actually massive. You are actively exploring the manifold. You are in a state of maximum agency.
You are.
But the second you hit send on that resignation email, boom, the area drops to zero. You've pruned away the alternative. You've collapsed into determinism.
That's a perfect illustration. To synthesize the core thesis of the OD complex text, determinism is the final trajectory. But free will is the manifold of possible trajectories before the choice is made.
Before the choice.
Right. The collapse itself, the aftermath of hitting send, is deterministic. But the pre-collapse space, that agonizing, tension-filled space where you are torn between two mutually exclusive lives, that space is very, very real.
We started this deep dive looking at a simple algebra equation. X squared equals negative 1.
Seems like a long time ago now.
It really does. We saw how a physical impossibility forced the math to build a loop the loop and rotate into a brand new complex dimension. And from there, we scaled up to realize that our own internal conflicts are deeply human Gorezer moments where we are torn apart by impossible choices aren't psychological failures at all.
They aren't.
They are complex mathematical surfaces where human agency actually lives.
This framework gives a profound dignity to the human experience of indecision. The next time you find yourself at that crossroads, agonizingly stuck between the safe path and the wild unknown, feeling like you can't make a move, you have to remember this math.
Absolutely.
You shouldn't feel stressed or weak or broken. You should realize that you are currently experiencing a mathematically high state of free will. You aren't failing to choose. You are standing on the manifold. Your area of freedom is vast.
You are literally living inside the math of your own agency. But before we wrap up today, there is one final lingering thought from the very end of the source document's research agenda that we have to mention, because it changes the scale of everything we've discussed.
It really throws a wrench in things.
It does. We've spent this whole time talking about 1D equations hitting walls and 2D flat surfaces of decisions between two choices. But what if we applied this framework to 3D quaternions?
Oh, the implications of that research agenda are staggering. Imagine a scenario where three or four entirely contradictory wills are pulling at you simultaneously.
Which happens all the time in real life.
Right. The math wouldn't just create a flat surface of choice. It would create a volumetric three-dimensional space of freedom. You wouldn't just be walking on a surface. You would be swimming in a sphere of possibilities.
Or even deeper, what if we look at this through a quantum lens, What if this manifold of contradiction is essentially a quantum superposition of human choice?
Now that is a thought.
I mean, think about it. Meaning all possible versions of your life, the one where you stay, the one where you quit, the one where you do something else entirely, are existing simultaneously in that null space, just waiting for the measurement of your decision to collapse it into reality.
It suggests that our conscious experience of choice might not just be a psychological event. It might be the very physical mechanism that forces reality to pick a lane.
Wow. So as you go about the rest of your day and face whatever crossroads is waiting for you out there, Think about that. When you feel that tension, that agonizing pull of the gory's air, you aren't stuck. You are holding a quantum superposition of your own life right in the palm of your hand, waiting to collapse the universe into whatever you choose next.